This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guests are Jack and Meg White of the White Stripes. They're an unusual rock band with only two people. Jack plays guitar and other instruments and sings. Meg plays drums. They've just released their new, much-anticipated CD, Get Behind Me, Satan. A review in the New York Times called it thrilling. The White Stripes formed in 1997. Although they're eccentric enough to have remained an indie band with a cult following, they've actually developed a large following and won a Grammy. Joss Stone had a hit with their song Fell in Love with a Boy. Jack White wrote several songs on the Bluegrass soundtrack for Cold Mountain and had a small part in the film. He produced a recent CD by Loretta Lynn called Van Leer Rose, which won this year's Grammy for Best Country Album. Jack and Meg White like to cloud the nature of their relationship to each other. They used to say they were siblings, but reporters have uncovered divorce papers. Jack got married last weekend in Brazil to model Karen Elson. Before we meet the White Stripes, let's hear the single from their new CD. This is Blue Orchid. Track from the new White Stripes CD. Jack White, Meg White, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you for having us, Terry.
Thank you.
Why did you choose this track as the single, Jack?
This track sort of, the only thing we could do with it was to have it be the first song on the album, and it just sort of saved the record when we were recording.
Saved it from what?
I don't know. It was just everything was going wrong for them, and it's never really happened before. And we're making a record. Everything was broken, and the tape machine was breaking, and the faucet was leaking, and the ceiling was leaking in the house. And I don't know. Just everything was going wrong. It just seemed like it was cursed left and right. I don't know why. And then that riff came out in the middle of the recording, and I wrote that song, and just it turned everything around to this real positive nature. I think it was just really emotional for a long time. You know, it was about 2 weeks of recording, and that came like the 3 days before we finished.
You said the house was leaking. Did you record the album in the house?
Yeah, I recorded it on my staircase and in the foyer of my home. I rented a nice Steinway. This is the first album I've ever made that has a nice piano on it. Actually, you know, and a real piano. I was using this old upright. It was like taken out of a Catholic high school. I've been using that on all my records since then. But finally rented a Steinway, you know, and it's really full sounding. So that was right by the front door.
Why record it in your own house?
Because I think we start to get stagnant, you know. I think modern studios start to feel plastic, you know, and it starts pushing you away from soulfulness and getting down to something raw. When you get into those really fancy places, plus you have to start debating with engineers, and they want you to start using computers and do things the faster way, the easier way, and you end up, and I don't really feel like arguing, you know, so I end up saying, okay, fine. So, I mean, this, we were doing razor blades and using razor blades to cut the tape and editing, you know, like the way, you know, the way it's supposed to be done. and we did it on an 8-track reel-to-reel and, you know, just rented the equipment that I wanted and used all the same microphones on everything, you know. Ribbon microphones on everything, from the vocals to the kick drum, you know. It's just a whole new technique of recording I've been trying, and I really like it a lot. I think it's really warm sounding.
Well, I'd like to know how performing on stage, because as we record this, you're about to start your tour. How does performing on stage compare with what it's like for you when you're actually recording an album?
It's very different for us, I think, because we don't have any set lists, and we never rehearse for the shows, and we play a different set every night. and everything is very off the cuff, and there's a lot of, we have a lot of, you know, we've got 5 albums now, and then we also have hundreds of cover songs that we've done over the years that we've thrown in between songs. I like to keep the show moving at all times, so it's very high energy, and it takes a lot out of us because we can't really go up and phone it in. You know, we don't really have 5 people on stage to all playing it just like the record and playing the same set every night, and it's hard for us to go on tour for more than 3 weeks because the show starts to suffer. You know, at that point, because it just takes so much out of us.
How comfortable are you on stage?
I am not that comfortable on stage. I mean, I'm not. I don't get nervous, but I have so much work to do. I never really get the chance to really enjoy it, you know. And in other bands I've been in when I was younger, when I just played guitar or just played drums, I could enjoy the show, you know. But I've got so much work to do in the band to keep the show moving and singing and playing at the same time that I can't really take a break, you know. So,
Meg White, how comfortable are you on stage?
I'm pretty comfortable on stage, I suppose, you know. It is difficult being just 2 people, you know. I mean, there's a lot of focus, probably more on me than there would be in a normal drummer, but because we do the side-by-side and all that sort of thing. But I don't get real nervous about it. It's, you know, you just kind of figure however it goes is how it's going to go. You just got to work with it.
How did you both start playing together?
We started I was just playing in the attic, and Meg sort of came up there, and I said, hey, get behind the drums, and, you know, I remember the first thing we would just play together sort of as a lark, we did Moon Age Daydream by David Bowie, and because Meg wanted to do that, she was really into that song at the time, and I have a recording of that actually still, I found it recently, and it just felt really good right off the bat. It just felt like something was different, and I think the reason why is because Meg's sort of childishness behind the drums really brought some new character to playing a song like that. And we started to play more and more, and it became this thing where, you know, I forget who it was, I guess it was Picasso maybe, who said that he spent his whole life learning, took his whole life to learn how to paint like a 5-year-old. I'm not sure if it was him who said that, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, that's how I felt about Meg. You know, she's painting like a 5-year-old. She's playing like a 5-year-old. She's playing drums just like a little child. And I wish I could do that. I wish I could play the guitar like a little child. You know, and so a good balance started to come out. You know, where I was more experienced or more into the technical side of songwriting, and she was coming from a totally opposite angle. And we're male and female as well, bringing, you know, that whole element to the mix too, and it just became a really good match, I think, and it became a great excuse for me to get away with playing the blues and being white and playing the blues, you know.
Wait, how did that become an excuse for being white and playing the blues?
Because I was looking for a reason, you know, because it's really close to my heart, and I always felt like when I'm doing it, it's like I can't get away with it because, you know, there's that whole sort of white boy blues hammer, you know, bar band kind of wimpy, you know, just retreaded over and over again, rehashed thing. It just has no soul to it. And but you know, the blues is really meaningful to me. It's very soulful to me, and the most important music, I think, of all time, you know. And I in order for me to play it, I mean, it took the White Stripes for me to be able to play it live because of the aesthetic of the band, where everything was red, white, and black, and me and her were presenting it in that fashion, that it was almost a distraction to trick people into not realizing that I was white.
Or maybe you were so white that it didn't matter, right?
That's what I mean, you know, with Jack White and Meg White, and the band's called the White Stripes, you know what I mean? So it almost like take it to the extreme of distraction.
Now, Jack, you play drums. That was your first instrument before a guitar.
And, that's right.
From what I've read, it sounds like you used to record drums and guitar when you would record stuff in your room. So when Meg started playing drums, did you want her to sound at all like you sounded, or were you looking for something completely different?
No, that was what struck me. I mean, it started at sort of as that lark thing with just sort of messing around, you know, and then it became something beautiful very, very quickly. And it became like, wow. And so I didn't want Meg to play proficiently at all. No. As a matter of fact, I said, please don't practice, you know, please don't play by yourself because it's just going to ruin it, you know.
So, Meg, now that you've been playing for several years, have you become more proficient in spite of Jack's urgings?
I suppose a little bit, yes. It's still probably not on the level of, you know, any of the classic amazing drummers, but, probably better, certainly better than I was then.
And, Jack, is that ruining things for you?
No, I think she keeps it tethered on it. You know, she really keeps the whole band, the two of us, you know, she keeps the band anchored. She's always been the structure that I'm built everything around, and I don't think she's never gone off, flown off a deep end. You know, I think that's almost like a, and I hate to say it about my own sex, but it's almost like a male flaw, you know, that super technicality, you know, where drummers just want to go and they want to do everything. They want to have 300 drums in front of them and, you know, and do everything they possibly can as if they're going to die tomorrow kind of thing. But, really, Meg's so much more in tune with soulfulness and emotion coming out of the simple things that she's doing.
Well, I want to play a track from the new CD, Get Behind Me, Satan, that I think really shows off your drumming, Meg. And this is called The Nurse. And
that's right.
There's drums, there's marimba. Who's playing marimba on this? Is that you, Jack?
That's me. Yeah, I wrote this song on marimba.
Uh-huh. Why did you write it on marimba? How'd you get a marimba in the first place?
I saw one for sale, a concert marimba. I'd always wanted one. Actually, I was looking for a vibraphone, and couldn't find it. And I found this marimba, and I bought it, and I guess, you know, that's what happens. You buy a mandolin, you end up writing songs on a mandolin, and I guess I just started writing songs on the marimba.
Did you start listening to different people? Did you just start listening to people who played marimba once you owned one?
No, I didn't. I don't like to do that. It almost makes me feel like, oh, I'll never be able to figure this out, you know. And I was actually, when I bought a mandolin, which I wanted to get more into, I had bought it right before I was in Cold Mountain because I was the character I was playing played mandolin, you know. So I said, oh, well, I'm going to get more into this. This is the perfect time for it, you know. And I went down and played with all those guys and T-Bone Burnett had put together in Nashville, and I thought, oh my God, you know, they picked the wrong guy. You know, these guys are, you know, there's bluegrass in their veins, and I didn't, you know, but I almost felt like, oh, I'm doing it wrong. And then I started asking these guys, well, how do you do this? And they were very nice to me and showed me all the chords and everything. And it was just, I've always taught myself how to play all those instruments, you know. I guess I'm just saying that it feels better to me. It feels more like I'm owning it when I teach myself.
Meg, your drumming on this is real, high energy, very insistent. Can you talk a little bit about your drumming on this track?
It's kind of a little crazy, I suppose, on this one, because it's got all those sort of interludes of just noise on it, which we just did separately during the recording. We came back in and did a lot of that stuff, and it's hard to say. I mean, what to say? I just think it's a cool song, and it was fun to drum on, but I don't know. It's going to be hard to do this one live, I think, probably.
too exhausting.
I don't know if you could play that. I can't play the marimba and make all that noise at the same time. It's just two counter rhythms going on during that because they were recorded in separate moments. So, and actually, this was a tape editing accident as well happened on this song where I used the razor blade and cut in the wrong spot. So we had to make a cover up on one spot, you know, with a lot of that noise, and it really worked into something even better than what we had before.
That's funny. Meg, before we hear it, would I'm sure not be the first person to comment that for a drummer you speak very quietly, like for someone who can make so much noise on their instrument.
Well, you know, one of my teachers once told me, you know, she wrote in my yearbook to speak softly and carry a big stick, you know. And I took that to heart.
Apparently. Okay. And this is from the White Stripes' new CD, Get Behind Me, Satan. And this is The Nurse.
Swear that the one who would care for you never would leave. She promised and said you will always be safe here with me. What promises open the door to be broken to me? No, I'm never, no, I'm never, no, I'm never gonna let you down now. No, I'm never, no, I'm never, no, I'm never gonna let you down.
That's music from the White Stripes' new CD, Get Behind Me, Satan. That's The Nurse, and my guests are Jack White and Meg White. Well, Jack, before we heard that track, you were talking about how you not only, you know, bought a marimba recently, you bought a mandolin, too, and you bought a mandolin at about the time you were working on the soundtrack for Cold Mountain. You play mandolin, at least I think it's mandolin, on a song on the new CD called Little Ghost.
That's right.
And it's a very mountain music kind of song. How were you first exposed to mountain music? Was it for Cold Mountain, or were you already listening to that kind of music?
I was already listening to mountain music at that time, for a few years, actually. I'd gotten, you know, when I was a child, it was a lot of, like, you know, rock and roll and kind of sort of regular rock and roll bands, and then by the time I was a teenager, I was getting into sort of more punk things, and then I finally sort of discovered the blues in my late teens. And then that led me into country, which led me into bluegrass, you know, and started getting into Bill Monroe and things like that. And I'd seen things, you know, like, you know, I didn't, you know, there's not much modern stuff going on at the time when I was a teenager. Remember, like, you know, Ricky Skaggs, and who's great, you know. But I love mountain music. And as a matter of fact, it started to focus on it in my early 20s that pretty much everything I love was coming from the American South, be it country or bluegrass or, you know, folk or blues, or, you know, it just seemed like everything was coming from there, you know, and I sort of felt like maybe that's where I should move to, you know. I don't know, but I feel a strong connection to it.
Okay, so you're from Detroit, and you're interested in blues, in rock, in obviously you've listened to a lot of punk and heavy metal too, in mountain music. You have all these influences that, you know, it's easy for us to hear in your recordings. Did you go through a period of not only asking yourself whether you could play the blues being white, but if you could play mountain music being from Detroit, or play early rock and roll because you grew up in the 70s and 80s? I mean, did every step you turn lead you to questions about, am I authentic enough? Or did you early on just decide, well, you know, I love it. It doesn't really matter whether I grew up then or I lived there or whatever.
We had a good experience in the White Stripes because we started off at the sort of whatever the lowest level you could of just, you know, playing at the Gold Dollar Bar, which is like a block from where we're sitting right now, which was a sort of local scene. Garage rock was happening, and just, you know, warming up for the bands, and, you know, gradually getting to play out of town in Toledo or Chicago, you know, whatever. We just sort of built it up from the absolutely nothing. And then that kind of showed, you know, me, because people really liked us in Detroit and embraced us immediately, which was really surprising. And, you know, we were like their secret band. And then we were this, you know, secret band of, like, people in Chicago or whatever, you know what I mean? We just kind of kept going on. And we started to learn this thing that no matter what you did, you know, some people were really going to like it, and some people were really not going to like it. And some people were going to like it for the wrong reasons. Like, it's part of their identity to have a secret band that they, you know, it becomes part of their personality. And once you get more popular, they don't want to be a part of you anymore because they don't like it for the music's sake. They like it for other reasons. So that kind of taught me early on that, you know, I can't think about that anymore. You know, I can't concern myself with that. That's just too cool, you know, or too cool for me. I mean, I can't. I mean, I love mountain music, and I'm going to play it, and I can't think about if it's going to fit with what we're doing or not. It just has to happen. And I think this band has been really great with that, that a lot of things have been able to work with it, very limited means. We've tried to make each song have its own personality on each record and not have a whole album full of the same monotonous riffs over and over and over again. And I feel such a breath of fresh air when something like Little Ghost on this record kind of comes up, because it makes, so you can take a nice deep breath and feel something, totally different personality.
Well, before we hear Little Ghost, the mountain music kind of song that you wrote for the new CD, would you talk a little bit about writing this song, Jack?
Yeah, I wrote this song at a friend's house. They had to leave me to watch the house for a minute, and I wrote the song in 10 minutes, matter of fact. The idea just came out. I don't know. I just kept thinking of this phrase, Little Ghost, and it just came out quickly. I started to think about being the only person who sees something, and maybe that's kind of the feeling you have when you're in love with somebody. That you're the only one who notices all these beautiful things about them, you know, and you kind of tell your friends, hey, isn't she great? Isn't she great? And like, yeah, she's okay, you know, but they don't see her the way you see her, you know, that sort of feeling. Almost, I just wanted to equate it with somebody that you actually could not physically see, you know, a dead person, a ghost.
The new album is called Get Behind Me, Satan. And there have been, you know, a couple of biblical references in your songs over the years. Were you brought up with religion?
Oh, yes, heavy duty. But not to the point of, you know, like speaking in tongues or anything. I mean, but it was in the air for sure. I appreciate it as well, you know. I like looking at life through that at times. I wouldn't consider myself sort of, I just like being in touch with God, I think. You know, I think that's sort of important. I think when you're a creative person in any kind of art form, once you finally admit to yourself that you can't create like God creates, it humbles you, and then you can be free to explore the beauty of that creativity, I think, you know. And I think when you look at it with God inside in the picture as well, it sort of frees you up, I think.
Do you see your musical abilities as some kind of gift that you were given?
I suppose it's more of a opportunity to me that, you know, that a lot of my friends have at being musicians. You know, they all have that opportunity. And I suppose what you do with it is a sort of, to me, it seems to be always out of respect for the people who came before me and, of course, God who came before everybody. And you know, it's just the idea that when you look at the creation of the world or the universe or anything like that, I mean, anything a human being can create seems to just pale in comparison. So, you know, it feels like, you know, out of respect, you have to be humble about it.
So what church was it that you grew up in?
The Catholic Church.
Catholic Church.
And the Roman Catholic Church.
And Meg, what about you?
I wasn't raised with any religion at all, actually.
So do you not see eye to eye on this?
I think we respect each other's opinions on this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We just heard a mountain music kind of song that you wrote, Little Ghost. And you produced an album by Loretta Lynn. And it was her first solo album since the 80s, I think. Very stripped down, there's even just like a voice and guitar track on it. Mm. Why did you want to work with her?
Oh, I'm absolutely in love with Loretta Lynn. There's no doubt about it. I had been such a huge fan and was struck so hard by Coal Miner's Daughter, the movie. That's the first experience with her. And as a child, you know, and it just grew and grew and grew, and I just became so enamored with her songwriting style. I just couldn't believe, you know, what she was doing. She's sort of these doubled choruses, you know, and it was just so brilliant, and it just seemed like, how is she doing this? And I remember talking to her while we were working on the album. She's like, yeah, everyone always tells me, Jack, you know, I'll write backwards and all these things. I was like, yeah, I think you kind of do write backwards, and so clever. She's so clever and talented. I mean, like, how could I not resist that? You know?
So did you ask her to work with you?
Someone told me that, I think it was her manager, said, you know, Loretta's thinking about making, you know, maybe one final album or one more album. I said, well, you know, I said, if I can throw my name on the pile, you know, I'd love to produce it. I figured there was no way it was going to happen. Matter of fact, I did it without a contract once it did, you know. We went down to record some demos at this guy's house in East Nashville in a home studio as well. We went down to record some demos, and Loretta had sent me 10 songs when her and her daughter, her daughter had just recorded the demos herself on acoustic, I'm not sure, but about 10 songs she just picked off the pile of hundreds of songs she had written. And we recorded 8 of them the first day, and all 8 of those are on the album. You know, and it was so special. I just couldn't believe it.
Well, I want to play one of two tracks, and I'll name the two, and then you could decide which of them.
Okay.
These are my two favorites. One is Family Tree, and one is Miss Being Mrs.
Oh. Well, I'd have to say Miss Being Mrs., because that was really special to me, because that's just me and her playing.
Oh, that is you. I wasn't sure if that was you.
Mm-hmm. It's me playing guitar and her singing, and we just did it live. That was the second take of the song, and that was another song. I was assuming that we were going to eventually move on and maybe make it into a full band song, possibly. But after hearing that playback, it felt so good to sit in that room and play and back her up by myself. How selfish of me, you know, to take that opportunity. But it was just so wonderful.
Well, I'm glad you didn't change it. So this is Loretta Lynn with Jack White on guitar.
I lie here all alone in my bed of memories. I'm dreaming of your sweet kiss. Oh, how you loved on me. I can almost feel you with me here in this blue moonlight. Oh, I miss being Mrs. Tonight, like so many other hearts, mine wanted to be free. I've been held here every day since you've been away from me. My reflection in the mirror, it's such a hurtful sight. Oh, I miss being Mrs. Tonight. Oh, I miss being Mrs. Tonight. Oh, and how I love them loving arms that once held me so tight. I took off my
That's Van Leer Rose, which is an album by Loretta Lynn, produced by Jack White. That was Jack White on guitar. And Jack White and Meg White are my guests, the White Stripes, and they have a new CD, which is called Get Behind Me, Satan. Jack, what was your style? How did you start to sing? Like, what came first for you, playing music, writing songs, singing?
Playing the drums came first for me, and then I needed something to play the drums to. You know, I had a little four-track reel-to-reel in my bedroom, and, you know, so I started to teach myself how to play guitar so I could play along with something. Me and another friend I went to high school with, his name's Dominic Suchita, and we had he liked music, you know, rock and roll and all that too, so we started learning things together, and he was playing bass and stuff, so we started doing these little recordings and covering Bob Dylan songs on record and whatever, you know, I don't know, whatever we were doing, and so it kind of built up from there, and then I started to get into this band, the Flat Duo Jets, when I was a teenager. And I worked at this upholstery shop. I was apprenticed for this man named Brian Muldoon. And after we were done at work, he played drums, you know, so after we were done for the day, we would set up the drums and the guitar, and we would play songs. And we were really into this two-piece band called the Flat Duo Jets, who were doing lots of kind of rockabilly and punk sort of music, but also throwing in this really gorgeous ballads, you know, from the 40s, you know, things that Patti Page and people had sung. And so I started to get more and more exposed to those kind of chord changes, I think. Started playing, you know, things like, you know, see the pyramids along the Nile, you belong to me, and things like that. And I started to get into that, those chord structures, you know, something I would not have been exposed to. And songwriting started to come out of that. And then once a couple of years later, I really, really got deeply into the blues. And I think some kind of that also sparked a little bit more of the songwriting, and I sort of opened up. And the poetry I'd been writing, or whatever I'd been writing, I don't know. And I started to work it together. I started to discover what you could do. Could you write the words first and then the music? You write the music first and the words and all that jazz. And, you know, I started throwing them together, and started to, by the time me and Minker were playing the band, I think it was started to come to something interesting.
You mentioned, you know, you were apprenticing in an upholstery shop. Did you see your future as lying in furniture?
I don't know. I remember, you know, when I was working there, I was really into music, you know, and I would just kind of thought, it just seemed like even playing a live gig was just this impossible thing, you know. How could I ever be in a band and play a show? I didn't even think that was, it was just never going to happen, you know. Especially the current sort of the attitude in Detroit kind of doesn't make you think that, you know, you're going to have a chance. I mean, maybe in L.A. or New York and things like that, that people kind of around you sort of make you think, yeah, you maybe one day you'll get on television even if you got the right friend, you know. But Detroit doesn't make you feel that way. And I didn't even think that I would ever be in a band, for one thing, let alone play on stage or let alone write music. And upholstery was the big sort of thing that I was doing. And I worked in a couple other shops, too, and I eventually opened my own Third Man Upholstery. I had my own studio where I worked on sculptures and did people's upholstery and antiques. And I made the big mistake of bringing, you know, guitar to my studio and eventually not getting any work done because I was playing guitar all day long.
So were you good at this, at upholstery?
I don't know. I was. It's an extremely difficult trade, you know. And I was, you know, I'm coming from the man I worked for, Brian Muldoon. He's sort of a super perfectionist, and he was working on mid-century modern furniture, you know, like the Ames and Jacobson and all these great designers were probably the most difficult type of upholstery to do, you know, gluing fabric directly to foam and all this jazz. So it was really hard. So I started doing these old settees and little 1800s furniture for these old ladies and things like that. And, you know, I could do that all right, but I remember going and talking to the other upholsterers at the supply place when I'd go and buy springs and staples and whatnot. I said, you know, how long is this going to take me before I start making money easily? It's not a hard thing to do. And he's like, probably 8 to 10 years it took me. It's like, okay. I don't know if I got it in me, man.
Meg, what was the future that you saw for yourself before you started playing music?
I don't know. You know, I did a few things, but like I was a cook for a long time. I went to culinary school, but then I discovered I liked eating better than cooking food, so that didn't work out too well. And then I don't know. I bartended for a long time. That's what I was doing before I, started doing this full time. Basically. I'm not sure where I would have gone, you know. I don't know.
Meg, you started singing on the previous CD, a song called Cold, Cold Night. How did you start singing?
There was a kettle prod, and Jack was behind me, and there was...
There was someone holding your arm behind your back, twisting it.
No, it was really fun at the sound of my own voice, but I've gotten a little bit more used to it.
There's a song that you sing, a very short song, I should say, on the new album, mm-hmm. called Passive Manipulation. Jack, did you write the song?
Yes, I did write the song.
Because it's written, I think it's fair to say it's written in a woman's voice.
Yeah, it is. I don't know what was the story behind that or anything. I just remember writing that and realizing that I'm not going to be able to get away with singing this. And I asked Meg, and I handed her the lyrics and said, do you think you would sing these words? And she said yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's hear it, and then we'll talk more about the song. This is Passive Manipulation from the new White Stripes CD, Get Behind Me, Satan.
Women, listen to your mothers. Don't just succumb to the wishes of your brothers. Take a step back, take a look at one another. You need to know the difference between a father and a lover. Women, listen to your mothers. Don't just succumb to the wishes of your brothers. Take a step back, take a look at one another. To know the difference between a father and a lover. Women, listen to your mothers. Don't just succumb to the wishes of your brothers. Take a step back, take a look at one another. You need to know the difference.
That's the White Stripes from their new CD, Get Behind Me, Satan. And it's one of the rare times that Meg White actually does the singing. Jack, why did you write this song? Advice to women about how not to be manipulated by their brothers or lovers.
Mm-hmm. I don't exactly know what to tell you. I just had this feeling in my head about how true relationships can be. And truth is sort of the number one theme throughout the whole album. And it sort of became a question of sometimes when people are together, it doesn't seem true, you know. You'll see other people in these bizarre relationships, and you wonder what's going on. And oftentimes there is some amount of manipulation going on, and people are doing things for the wrong reasons. And I thought, well, what would be the good advice, you know, and who would it come from? And say it's, you know, hey, women, listen to your mothers, you know. Don't just succumb to the wishes of your brothers.
No, in concerts, you do covers, and there's a few covers on your albums. And one of them is a cover of the Burt Bacharach, Hal David song, I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself, a song I really love. And Jack, would you talk about why you wanted to cover this song?
It was actually Meg's idea to do that song.
Oh, well, Meg, why don't you describe it?
I had heard the Dusty Springfield version of it, actually, and I just thought it was an amazing song. I had just gotten this like CD, and I heard that song, and I'm like, you know what? I bet we could do that song. It would be fun to do that song. And so I suggested it to Jack, and he was into it. So,
did you want to sing it yourself?
No, I can't. I can't sing that high. Jack's a specialist in that one.
And Jack, what did you like the song, and did you have a sense right away of what you wanted to do with it?
Oh, I love that song. I thought it was beautiful. Matter of fact, I sort of identified with it as a blues song. I thought, really, at the core of this, it's really a blues song, and it could be something that Blind Willie Johnson might have played and sung about had he not done mostly religious music or whatever, but it just felt like a notion that he would have expressed. And you know, I got a lot of people asking me, well, what does that mean? You know, what does that mean to you? And I thought, wow, I thought it was a sort of a universal thought. I just don't know what to do with myself. I just don't know what to do with myself. That seems to be something that everyone would feel like 20 times a day.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Okay, well, let's hear it. This is the White Stripes version of the Bacharach David song, I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself. It's from their CD, Elephant.
Well, I don't know what to do with myself. Just don't know what to do with myself. Like a summer rose, you're sounding red. I need your sweet love to be loved away. I just don't know what to do with myself. Just don't know what to do with myself.
I've read a lot of articles about you both, and it sounds like you don't really talk about what your relationship is or was with each other. And it started off, people thought you were brother and sister, and then husband and wife, divorced, ex-husband and wife. So is that something you're still not talking about?
Yeah, I hate to go into it because it's you know, no matter what we used to say, nobody ever believed us. And it got to the point where it didn't matter what the relationship was, and I just said, it just takes more focus away from the music, you know, and I just wanted people to know, first and foremost, that it was a male and female on stage, and they were working together, and they weren't working together for the wrong reasons, you know, that was what was important to me.
What do you mean for the wrong, like, they're stuck working together because they were married, or is that what you mean?
Yeah, stuck working together because they're brother and sister, or because they're married, or because they used to be married, or whatever it is, that jazz, you know, people come into a show and come into listening to a record, or going to a movie, people come in with preconceptions, you know, and you can't avoid that, and, you know, you lose an amount of what you could possibly share with that crowd when their preconceptions are, you know, they're being misled or something. I don't know. There's an amount of, I don't know, it's just difficult to explain, I think, difficult to talk about.
Isn't there a part of you that wants to fix whatever misconceptions are out there, since there already are these different theories? No?
I don't. I really don't. I'd rather anything that people, you know, sort of, I want their whatever preconception they have, I want it to change once they come and see us live. I want them to not care. I want them to, when they walk in, to say, oh, someone who might think it'd be dragged along, all this band's nothing but gimmicks, boy and a girl, and they're red, white, and black, and they have peppermints beating on the bass drum, and they, you know, all this jazz, and they're called the White Stripes. Whatever, you know, this band's all gimmicks, you know. I'd love them to come in, and then after a few songs, not even realize, like, what's happening anymore, to be consumed and to be exhausted by what's happening, and their preconceptions just kind of drift away. And by the time they're walking around after the show, I would hope that we've exhausted them and that their preconceptions have disappeared.
Well, let's get to the red, white, and black thing, which is the colors that you've dressed in, that your albums have been. Most bands don't have a color scheme. why did you want a kind of identifiable set of colors to work with? Does that get back to the upholstery?
It was kind of coming out of all those kinds of things. I was really, and I still do, revolve most of the creative things I do around the number three. And I wanted to present this band with as many components based around that number, such as I wanted to break it down to the minimalism of storytelling, melody, and rhythm, and guitar, vocals, and drums. Red, White, and Black became this presentation which we've done since the very first show. And it just became a way of solidifying ourselves. And the White Stripes has always been about how to box ourselves in, how to eliminate all that opportunity.
You said the number three is a significant number for you. Why three?
I just think it's perfection to me. I don't know. It's an attempt at sort of that creative perfection that maybe God has. And it seems to be the most minimal number for things. I, you know, I used to say, like, oh, well, there's a reason. You know, like, you could have, it's a minimal amount of legs you could have on a table and still keep it up. You know, a minimal amount of bolts you could put on a wheel on a car. Or, you know, the number keeps popping up, and it's in nature especially as well, you know.
If three is such a big number, do you feel like it should be a trio and not a duo?
Well, then we would have four components. Then we wouldn't just have vocal, guitar, and drums.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you're counting the components and not the people.
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
Jack, you grew up in a family of like 10 kids. I think you were the youngest of 10.
Mm-hmm.
So did your brothers and sisters look after you, and did they?
Oh, boy, did they. Uh-huh. Oh, boy, did they. It's like having 10 parents.
Was that a good thing a bad thing?
I don't know. I really don't know. I've been asking myself that my whole life. I suppose God bless them, because I love them very much, and they were always very helpful to me. And in good and bad ways, by learning, you know, when you're the youngest, you get to learn from everybody's bad example, you know. You learn how to not make the same mistakes that everyone else made. And you get a different perspective on things. My family also has a very big, chip on their shoulder about pride and ego, about not patting somebody on the back when they're doing so well. So it sort of makes you try harder, I think, to impress, and almost this never really satiated feeling, you know, that I was sort of never really encouraged out loud, you know. You know, it was sort of, yeah, okay, what you're doing's okay, but you could be doing it better, kind of a feeling, which kind of became a frustrating thing to me when I was a teenager, you know. It was like, forget this, man. I don't need this kind of mentality anymore. I feel good about what's happening, or whatever I'm working on, or whatever furniture or music or sculpture or whatever, and you know, I don't need this approval anymore, you know. And I think that's what really shaped me, was the letting go of that.
And Mick, did you grow up in a big family too?
Significantly smaller.
Well, I want to close with another song from the new CD, Get Behind Me, Satan. And this is called I'm Lonely, But I Ain't That Lonely Yet. And Jack, you mentioned that when you were recording this in your house, you had a Steinway piano, and you really liked the full sound that it got. And I think we'll hear that on this track. Do you want to talk a little bit about the song and also about playing piano?
This sort of came about right before we started recording. I sat down and... it was a joke. Loretta Lynn had called me on the phone, and it was a joke we had made with each other on the phone about something to do with Meg. I forget what it was, you know. I was making some comment about Meg, and I said, yeah, I get lonely. And then Loretta finished the sentence. She goes, yeah, but I ain't that lonely yet. And I said, can I have that? And she said, yeah, you can have that. So I took the title, and I sat down after I got off the phone with her, and I wrote it, the song. And I thought it was just a nice little thing to play around with. And then once we had recorded it, it felt like all this... This is probably belongs at the end of the album.
And we'll put it at the end of our interview. Yeah. Jack White, Meg White, thank you so much. Congratulations on the new CD.
Thank you for having us.
Jack and Meg White of the White Stripes. Their new CD is called Get Behind Me, Satan.